everyone. Welcome. I'm here to welcome you to Commonwealth Club's InForum, Connect Your Intellect. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org/InForum. And you can follow the best of our speaker dialogue on Twitter with hashtag InForumSF. I'm Carolyn Allberger, editor of EaterSF. I'd like to thank our production partner, Kitchit, the home of Bespoke Dining, for their help in putting together tonight's event. Tonight, we are joined by this very talented group of chefs here. I'm personally very honored to be here on the stage with all of them. And they're going to tell us a lot. We're going to talk about San Francisco's dining scene and get some inside scoop. And interestingly, they've all met one another on the job, and they've stayed friends. So that's definitely something we're going to talk about as well. Firstly, we have Evan Rich here, who served as chef de cuisine at the Michelin two-starred Croix for 3 years. He and his wife, Sarah, met at Boulay in New York and are now working on their own restaurant in Hayes Valley, which is very exciting.
Yay.
Next up, we have Brett Cooper, who is the chef at Outer Lands, which I think many of us know and love. Before working at Outer Lands, he was at Rubicon, Croix, and Saison, three excellent restaurants. Then we have Brandon Jew, executive chef at Bar Agricole, who has staged all over the globe, from Italy to Shanghai. Brandon just told me he considers Quince and Zuni Cafe to be among the most influential places he's worked. Then we have Michael Gaines, former sous chef at the 2-Michelin-starred Manresa in Los Gatos. He will be the chef de cuisine at a very cool project coming up from Flour and Water. It's called Central Kitchen, and it's opening in a few months in spring. And finally, we have William Werner. William was the pastry chef at Quince for several years, and then he went off on his own, launched a company called Telltale Preserve Company, and he's got a new hospitality group called Outfit Generic and a undisclosed location patisserie coming up in the Mission that we're all very excited about. So please welcome all of the chefs. All right. So first question is about frenemies. And I know Brandon has a lot to say about this. Actually, I know you all do, because I think it's really great that you all met on the job, and you're all friends, and you're chefs at restaurants that could be considered competitive. But I know all of you think that your friendship is an asset on the job. And so, Brandon, like, tell me about that.
I think the community we have in San Francisco is it's special to like our generation. I think a lot of us really support each other, and I think it's different. I think it's different compared to the other generation, like the older generation of cooks, chefs. I just kind of feel like we kind of compare notes a lot more.
Yeah.
And we're kind of rooting for each other. The access to each other's resources and I think just to each other. We see each other at the farmer's market. We kind of tell each other what we're up to. And we're like genuinely like really supportive of each other. I think that's special to this area.
So before, I mean, when you say that it's different for this generation, what was it like before? Were people kind of secretive with their information and they didn't share recipes or they didn't kind of share ideas?
People
and now there's more of like...
books.
Yeah.
I think in general, I mean, restaurants were more secretive.
Yeah.
There was a very closed mindset to sharing information.
Is that something you experienced earlier in your career?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
interesting.
I mean...
So it's kind of like when our generation started to grow up, we made our own rules in a way.
I mean, I learned through apprenticeships, and
yeah.
through those apprenticeships, I've kind of, you know, you kind of come up through the kitchen from the ground up, and I don't know, like, you learn to just kind of go through that chef's teaching, and you stay with that person for a while. I think now there's more access to information, and I think people are more, I think, exploring what other people are doing, and it's easier to access, like, other restaurants through the internet, through blogs, all that kind of stuff. So cookbooks are just, like, exploding versus, like, what they were maybe 10 years ago.
So would you say all of those things are sources of inspiration, like the internet and then talking to each other? And
I mean, I think we all find inspiration through very random things.
Yeah.
Colors, shapes, textures.
What I get out of
weird things.
It's about being progressive. You know, before it was this hidden black book of recipes that I don't want you to copy and go to your own restaurant and open it up. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're not going to take Brandon's recipe and open up a restaurant and do Brandon's dish because that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be able to execute it the way he does. And, you know, his you know, advanced knowledge is mine. You know, so if he has you know, we were talking about last week fermenting cardoons. You know, I love cardoons. I boiled them and made pasta with them. You know, and then he brought this whole thing up about fermenting them, which was exciting to me. But if he wrote down the recipe and gave it to me, I'm not going to make it the way that Brandon makes it. I'm going to make it the way I make it. I'm going to use it the way I use it. And it's completely different. But that helps progress the craft. You know, it's about evolving the craft. And, you know, it's this healthy competitiveness that helps us grow. Because his success is my success. If people are really excited about his food, then when I'm cooking and he says, oh, Evan, you know, he's doing this, he's doing that, it's great, you should check it out, they're going to get excited about what I'm doing. And then I'm going to do the same for Will. You know, if he's doing a dessert and he calls me up and asks me, oh, I got this new ingredient, what do you, you know, it's going to be the same thing, and it's going to help push the craft to be more exciting. And, you know, it's just going to evolve. It's going to be better, and it's not going to be this closed off, if you leave and steal my recipes and you haven't earned them, it's like, you know, I have three, you know, four or five black books of places I've worked that are like, if I did any of these dishes, I would be looked at like, you know, it's about progression.
Just reference points.
Really. Exactly. You know, like, I've learned how to season, I've learned how to build flavors, I've learned how to cook, but I didn't learn how to copy. You know, you learn how to be creative and how to grow, and working with each other helps that progression happen faster.
So, Evan, that's so interesting, and I'm curious, do you think that that's something that's specific to San Francisco, or do you think that that's just happening in all of the major dining cities in the U.S. right
now? I think a large part of that happened in Spain. I mean, Spain kind of took over and became this great food mecca, you know, and the reason why that happened is because of all these big guys in Spain would be like, they'd get together and they'd sit down and they'd say, I'm working on this, you're working on that, you're working on this. And then they'd go off and do their own thing and test and experiment and create and come back and say, look, if you want to make this gel, you use this ratio and it comes out just like this. And so that I don't have to waste my time thinking about it, I'm just going to create now and build. And then that helped their whole food scene kind of evolve and become this great, you know. You know, I mean, the difference is you go to France, and France is like, when you stodge in France, you don't pull out your notebook, you don't write down notes, you work, you peel your potatoes, and you absorb what you can because the French guys think you're going to steal from them, you know? I mean, this is, you know, a while
Isn't
ago.
Isn't it changing a little bit now?
No, like, no, yeah.
That's
exactly what I'm saying. I think it's not just San Francisco, it's everywhere. You know, they're seeing the effect of sharing knowledge and experimenting and saving time. You know, I mean, when you're a cook, when you're a chef, it's all about saving time. How can I be more efficient? How can I be better? How can I push further? How can I work quicker? You know, and like, it's not just your prep day. It's not just your cleaning day. It's everything, you know? I mean, I go home and I say, you know, how can I do my laundry quicker? How can I fold it faster? Right? You know, like, I mean, these are just, like, things that are set in your head, you know, when you're young. Yeah. It works out quick, you know. But these are things that are set in your head when you're a young cook, that, you know, when you start at your base, you know, this is when it's important to get into that right kitchen.
Right.
So for me, what I think it is just an evolution. I just feel like San Francisco has a very close-knit type of you know, it's very incestuous.
Yeah, I mean, I think even Evan brought up a good point with when I saw the email thread going back and forth when we were hitting menu items, like the excitement from everybody about the cardoons and the other dishes, where you see a lot of these guys maybe back in the day that, you know, they'd just kind of be radio silence, like, this is what I'm doing. Oh, okay, thank you. And it would move on. It was like this. It was actually like, oh, wow, that's great. Oh, you're going to do that? Oh, that sounds great. And it's kind of back and forth and some interesting, like, banter. And I think that's what's cool even about what you're saying with Spain. It was more of a common goal, like, how do we bring each other up by talking to each other? And,
yeah, because
and
all those guys are individuals in their own right.
They're all individuals, but they wanted to bring the country culinary scene up.
I mean, they had a common goal, but it's not like they're all copying each other. Mm-hmm. They're all very specific in what they do, and every restaurant you go to is very unique and different, you know?
Divide and conquer.
Well, I mean, I worked for some guy who, you know, he would show you how to do something, and he'd say, oh, for this puree, you this, 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 and he'd be like, what's that over there? And then he'd throw in the rest of the ingredient, and you'd be like, you know, and then every time you did, he's like, exactly, and he'd be like, you can't do it, I need to do it myself.
And then he would beat you.
Yeah, well, you know, he'd freak out, and he'd make you do it, you know, and you're just, you know, that to me is, that's ridiculous, that's taking steps back. That's, you know, you want your cooks and you want your people you work with to be strong and be able to push forward. So sharing with them, you know, is only helpful for you. It's only going
to
make your
better.
Exactly. It's going to make your job more efficient. And, you know, it's a small picture, but in, you know, you can look at it in a bigger.
I think it also helps you push yourself, because if you're giving away these thoughts and these ideas so openly, then you're always there's still a healthy competition. You're going to scurry back. And be like, okay, I got to
that's old. I got the new.
I'm going to put your own mark on it.
Oh, you're doing that? Yeah. That's, you know.
And that's why I think younger chefs are getting so creative nowadays, is because since there is all that information out there, you can't just do the same thing that somebody else has done or do the same thing that you did last year. You know,
you have
to be creative, and you have to use those techniques that you've learned in different ways and take different approaches to
food, there definitely is the backlash of too much information.
Yeah, that's what I was curious. Is there a downside to all this sharing? Like, is anyone losing out in this equation?
There's not. Yes, because you do have these restaurants that do open up, and they're just basically taking recipes off the internet and doing things that are maybe popular because they pay a publicist to tell them it's great, or, you know, whatever it is. But it kind of dilutes what we do. It takes away from the hard work that took. To make those recipes and to understand how to build on them, and, you know, so you could say,
I mean, copying is the highest form of flattery in a sense.
Sure,
you know, so.
But
that's
you
the
know.
Mature attitude.
We're not really like we're never really content on like a dish either. I think that's, and it always progresses. I think my food isn't going to be the way it is next year, or maybe even next week or next month. I mean, we're constantly trying to make improvements all across the board. So. Learning from each other is kind of progressing all of us.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would be where we are now if we didn't have cooks like each of us to work with in our careers.
But at the
people
same
that
time,
were willing.
If everyone was like us, there wouldn't be us, you know?
True. So another thing that I wanted to touch on, since I have all you sitting here, is how much we've moved forward in the past 4 years. I know personally as a writer, when I moved here 8 years ago, there was a lot of beats on plates happening, like everywhere. And it got a little tiring. And we all know the famous David Chang phrase or whatever he said about the fig on a plate. And I feel like we've moved on. And I'm walking around now to restaurants, you'll see like a lot of more modern techniques. And I'm just curious if you think we've moved on and if you think we've proved David Chang wrong or what's going on with all this.
Yeah, I mean.
I think that pissed a lot of people off.
Yeah, it definitely did. It was very polarizing.
Yeah, it was.
It was in the context that it was kind of approached in, I guess. But if you think about actually a lot of the food that, you know, our generation is cooking nowadays, you still kind of have that idea of like a fig on a plate or a carrot on a plate, but it's just advanced to a carrot on a plate three different ways. You know, with all that information that we've been talking about that's out there, you know, diners are more savvy these days, and cooks have more information about techniques and different things that you're doing, and they can pretty much have a plate set down in front of them in your restaurant and understand everything that's going on. So if you're not challenging people to you know, be thoughtful and be creative, then you end up with a fig on a plate.
I mean, do you think that the public is demanding more now?
I mean, I think so, definitely.
I wonder why. I mean, why would you say that is, Brett?
I think because of the wealth of, you know, farmers markets, just the knowledge that's out there. People just have a better sense of what they're eating these days, especially in the Bay Area. I think there's so many local farms and ranches. And
I think there's expectations also of our guests.
Yeah, definitely.
With prices that they're paying.
Right.
In this city in particular.
Yeah.
Well, now everyone
they expect something.
And everyone has the access to that fig, you know?
Yeah.
So why can't you? I mean, we all shop at the farmer's market. You'll see us there on Saturday. You can buy that same fig that I'm buying. Why are you going to come to our restaurant and buy that fig that we put on a plate? I mean, there's a...
But it's also the level of technique is definitely... It's definitely going to a higher level.
Well,
I mean, are we becoming better trained? Are we just more interested?
I think it's just evolving. I mean, you can kind of root it all back to Chez Panisse. And, you know, when Chez Panisse started, you know, they took this kind of idea and this thought of ingredient-driven food and really just took it, and it was special. It was unique.
They took it to the extreme, too.
Well, you know, me, I mean, I kind of just break into it, but me coming from New York, you know, you come out here. So I was in New York, very happy, lived there, loved it. My family's from there, and my wife said, we're moving out of the city. You know, you get to pick, but we're leaving. And I, you know.
She wasn't from New York?
No. You know, and we kind of settled on San Francisco just because when you're in New York, you know, obviously the most important thing in the world that's going on is in New York. But San Francisco was second best. And you're like, all right, you know, like, let's
that's
try
why I moved out here.
Yeah, well, you know. And you're like, let's try it. And when you come out here, you hear Chez Panisse and the French Laundry, you know.
Yeah.
And the French Laundry is this, like, I mean, you know, temple and what, you know, very hard to achieve. But, you know, Chez Panisse, you go eat there. And you sit there and you get the food and you're kind of like, really? Are you kidding me? I mean, I came out here and I was disappointed to say, you know, like... And then I started working with Mike Tusk, you know, and Mike Tusk came from there. And, you know, he, farmer's market, ingredient driven. And, you know, I've been here for 4.5, almost 5 years now. And I went back maybe 3 months ago and sat down and had a meal and I got it. Like it clicked. And I was like, oh, my God, like I understand it. And you can see the roots of that. You know, that's where that fig in the plate comes from. You can see all the roots, like even at Qua, what I do. You see where that comes. You know, you see what Brett does. You see what Brandon does. You see what Michael does, what Will does. You know, it comes from that, and now I appreciate it. But, you know, that was, you know, how many years ago? And we've evolved, and now it's accessible to everybody here. So you guys can go out and buy that same beet, buy that same fig easily at the farmer's market from the same farmers that we're buying. I mean, I shop exclusively at all the farmer's markets, and I don't, you know, maybe some things we get behind the counter, but everything that I buy, you can buy. So why are you going to come? You know, we need to challenge ourselves and, you know, the public.
It's a testament to the farmers we have locally, too. I think as we are progressing, they're progressing. And they keep pushing the envelope of what they can grow and new heirloom seeds of things. And, like, the amount of... things that they grow now compared to maybe last year even is remarkable.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see people with kind of like proprietary vegetables.
Yeah.
Like certain restaurants that have a vegetable that I've never seen before that's grown just for them. And that seems to me to be like a very San Francisco thing. I don't know if that's happening in other places.
It does happen in other places. I mean, I worked with Stuart Brioza for a long time, and when he was in Michigan, he had people growing everything you could think of for him, and they'd bring it to his door, and that's what he would use that night. I think the idea is just kind of newer. Like, it's been happening for a long time, but chefs are just taking advantage of it more these days because farms are more open to actually doing it because they understand, like, why the chef wants it rather than, like, oh, I'm just going to sell you all these tiny radishes. They don't taste like anything.
Speaks volumes on their part because it's actually less profitable for them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think everyone up here on the stage appreciates that. I mean, it's huge.
Why is it less profitable?
If we have a farmer who's going to grow young lettuces, right, they're going to harvest those lettuces, and they're charging per pound, so it takes more, right? It takes more for a case. Mm-hmm. And then when they're pulling that out of the soil, they have to wait for that to grow back. So it's taken 2.5 months, right, to get to that point. They could wait another 2 weeks, and they'd have a full head of lettuce, right, and they could sell it for more. But because Evan wants that, you know, because it has more flavor, it looks better, it's more delicate, they're going to do it. So,
at our restaurant, we have an arrangement set up with the farm that we actually front them money before the season, and we talk about what they can grow for us, and in turn, we are guaranteed those things. So for me, I can start to plan what they're going to be harvesting, and it's a farmer that we really believe in. They're a biodynamic farm, and they're young farmers that are doing things the hard way. And I think.
So Brandon, what's the name of that farm?
It's called Heart Arrow Ranch.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Never heard of them.
They're in Ukiah. They're a little further up, but yeah, they raise our lambs, our pigs, so they're doing a lot for us. And it's cool. It's a cool relationship to have that conversation with a farmer.
So the idea flow seems to me to be going very equally in both ways. I mean, do you feel like you're getting ideas from farmers and they're getting ideas from you, or is it more one way or another way?
I mean, I personally visit the farmers and go see. I mean, we went up to Full Belly Farm one time, and they had all this, like, overgrown onions with like seeds and flowers and stuff like that, and you're like, wow, I would buy that from you. And then they started selling it to us, or you know, vice versa. They said, we have this plot, what would you do with this, you know? And you know, I went and saw Annabelle maybe 2 weeks ago, and she had all these green Meyer lemons, you know, and she's kind of like, I don't know what to do with them. And you're like, I'll take them.
Is that what chefs are doing? I mean, for the most part in the Bay Area, are chefs going out to the farms and meeting their farmers and really like developing this intimate tight relationship?
I mean, that's definitely unique to out here. I mean, you can do it somewhat out, but it's about relationship. I mean, you know, like your farmer knowing that when you grow these perfect little turnips that, you know, no one will really buy or pay for, you know, they know, oh, Evan loves little baby vegetables, you know? So
everybody knows that.
Now everybody knows.
Yeah, well, if you guys see any, I'll take them.
But at the same time, I think a lot of farmers and people that are, you know, raising animals and people that are selling us a lot of these things are kind of all in our generation also. So they're excited about the restaurants that we're working at the same time. It's not just like, oh, I got to get rid of all this stuff. Who am I going to sell it to? You know, they're interested in what we're doing, and we're interested in what they're doing. So it's kind of that relationship that's easy to build on.
Right.
And everyone has this mindset about turning a profit and how much can I make and how can I maximize my profits. I mean,
it has to be that way.
I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I know these guys kind of feel the same way. Yeah. It's like, we don't do this for money. I mean, I hope you guys don't do this for money. But the farmers kind of think the same way. And it's not, you know, obviously you're in business to make money. But at the end of the day, it's about the craft. And it's about, you know, and they have that same mentality where there's a cohesiveness. You know, they, like Annabelle, I know for a fact, she like searches these catalogs for random heirloom seeds and, you know, tries them, and some things work, some things don't. You know, and it's the same thing.
So, Evan, who is Annabelle? I think maybe some people.
Star Route Farm. She runs the farmer's market. Yeah. She runs the farmer's markets for Star Route, and she has her own little plot of land on Star Route in Bolinas and called La Tercera. She does like chicories and stuff like that. But she's been around for a long time, and she's great. But I mean, that's just my example because everyone kind of knows her, but it's about the craft.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by it. Like, our farmers are progressing our food just by the things that they're interested in, too. So I think that helps inspire us.
I don't think this is anything new. I think it's something that got lost.
Yeah,
and definitely. It's getting connected again with this generation.
So, Michael, when do you think it got lost and why?
I'm going to throw the 1970s, 80s, early 90s out there.
Uh-huh. That whole general black hole.
Yeah. With the exception, of course, of Chez Panisse and everything that was happening
right
there. But
what do you attribute that to?
Money.
Yeah. Really. Have you seen Wall Street?
Makes sense.
Greed.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's always been going on. It's just kind of like there's a culture that's been created, and, you know, like people like, you know, these guys are helping push that, and, you know, Ravi over there is helping as well. But it's like it's just the community, and it's a culture, and it's kind of like, I mean, using the word in style, you know, but it's just like it works for us, and there are more and more people who are getting into it and enjoying it and you know, feeling satisfaction from it, because it's, you know, at the end of the day, for us, it's more satisfactory to make a great plate of food that, right, you know, you leave and you're like, holy shit. Like,
okay.
Oh, wow, that was an amazing dish. You know, then, you know, we print up our receipt at the end of the night, like, all right, we turned, you know, 20 tables and did this much. Yeah. You know, like, that's what it's about. And, you know, the people in San Francisco are helping that as well, you know, because they're willing to kind of go that extra mile, pay that extra dollar for the craft to kind of evolve, you know, and it helped. People going out to eat and enjoying our restaurants help us push ourselves further, and it's a give and take.
Mm-hmm. I do feel we're blessed here, though, with that.
Oh, definitely.
It's not everywhere else, and I think even the clientele is very respectful of what it takes. And just like you said, they go to the farmer's market, and they see the raw product and how much it costs, and then they see what you do with it and put it out there on the plate. And, you know, it's they respect that. And I think as a whole, this community is growing and pushing on that. And so that guy with the fig on the plate now in New York, there's a lot of figs on plates now. So it's
interesting. It's kind of going backwards.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
the farm to table thing is hot everywhere else.
Yeah, and that's really old school for us. So
yeah, we're over it. We've moved on.
Well, I mean, I really truly believe what we're doing in San Francisco is kind of we're gonna be the place. I mean, I was just in New York, and I mean, don't hold it to me, but you can go. I can go 100 times and have 100 different experiences in New York. But the last time I was there, it was stale. You know, there's no money, rents are super high, and everyone's just looking, how can I pay the bills and how can I stay open? You know, how can I pay my employees and how can I stay open? I feel like out here, we have a good mix of, I mean, yes, it's expensive, but it's not as expensive as in New York. Rents are not as high, you know. You don't have to be open 7 days, seven lunches. You know, you can be open, I mean, at Qua, we were open 4 days for a while. You know, and it's like we can do that because, you know, it creates this environment. But in New York, it gets stale. And, you know, the farmer, the fig on a plate out there is like, that's safe, that's easy, that, you know. And out here, there's an environment being created that's kind of like, push yourself harder. You know, I got into this industry because I like to challenge myself. And, you know, if I'm not being challenged, I'm bored, you know? And, I mean, I love to cook great food, but at the end of the day, you can only roast a chicken so many times. You know, you want to challenge yourself and push yourself to that next limit. And, you know, there are a ton of other things that I enjoy about it, but pushing myself is a very high part on why I enjoy what I do. And, you know, just making it, I mean, I know I used to work with Brett, and I know every day we would sit down and say, what can we do today? You know, what can we try today? How can we make this better? Who can we do, you know? Same thing with Will. Will would come in with lists and say, how can we make this more efficient? But, you know.
Sounds annoying.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
A little bit.
It's a pastry chef thing.
Definitely is.
So actually, I really want to touch on this before our time's up. I want to talk about the Food Network, which is a big gear switch, but it's definitely a very predominant force in the food world these days, and I know it's had its effect on young chefs coming out of school, and I'm curious how you think it's changed things. William, I know you have some things to say about this, so we'll start it off with you.
yeah, I mean, there's a lot different now from when I started, and I think when we all started, we had a small talk about this, but there's so much information out there now. You know, so much accessibility. And even if, like, you just Google, like, a blog, like a sous vide blog, you're going to get, like, Johnny, who's a 9-to-5er through the week, and then through the weekend, he's cooking sous vide and putting up all these recipes and everything else. And it's just infiltrating everywhere. But I think for the culinary students, it becomes maybe almost overwhelming. And I guess there's a couple of factors for me that get a little concerning is, number one, the price of culinary schools, I think, and how much they cost, because, you know, we don't pay anything in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and not saying that we're a school, but there is, you know, there's that factor of, you know, you've got to do your time, you've got to learn, you've got to cook, you've got to grow. You have to become valuable, in a sense, in this industry. You know, and it's hard. It's taken me 12 years, 13 years to become valuable, maybe, if I'm valuable. I don't know. But I think for, you know, the culinary school, when I first started out, I had this conversation with Evan the other night. It's, there was a minimum requirement of 2 years professional career placement. And you could have been a nurse. You could have been a doctor. You could have been a guy, you know, restocking shelves. But you did 2 years, and you were in industry, and you were a career. And they felt like, okay, well, cool. This must really be your passion to give up something you've been doing for 2 years to go into this field where you're not going to pay anything. You're going to work like 15 hours a day. Some guy's going to yell at you in French constantly. And, you know, you're going to love it. So let's prepare you for that. And then this kind of dissipated. So now it's, for me, there's a couple things. You get people walking through the door that, because of all this accessible information, they kind of want to skip that traditional old school, and they want to go right to the new. You know, the innovation,
I've
the innovation.
My education.
You know,
chef.
I've already been there.
I'm
done that.
Chef.
I'm a chef. And they also think, I think, I shouldn't say they, but, you know, I think this feeling of a timeline has been, you know, just shortened. But I guess, you know, if I paid 80 grand for culinary school, I'd want to be paying back my loans pretty quick, too. So it's the only way to go up. So it's kind of created this really interesting pickle in the kitchen of, you know, I don't have much experience. I haven't done this before, but, you know, I need to make this much, and, you know, I kind of want to be a sous chef. And then you kind of look at the resume, and you're like, wow, you've been out of school like 2 months. You did an internship. My sous chefs can run circles around you.
I definitely want to continue what you're saying because it's super interesting, but I want to let the audience know that we're going to open it up to audience questions shortly. So if you want to start lining up at the mic, if you have some burning questions, we're going to keep speaking a little bit, and then we'll go to the audience. So I'm curious on that point, is culinary school still necessary?
It's a catch-22. I mean, for pastry, you're dealing with something, you know, that is specific, and I think that's what's happened a lot in this industry. If you even see now with, like, you know, butcher shops becoming prevalent again, like people excelling in butchery, people excelling in bread, people excelling in pastry, people excelling in, you know, different disciplines that maybe before were kind of just kind of all grouped together. So for pastry, it's like, you know, I want people with experience, and I don't care if you can do spearification, I don't care if you can make a foam. For me, you're going to make pastry cream, and that's it. You know, it's the hierarchy in a sense.
Yeah.
So you have to do your dues. I think you have to come in and you have to work through the kitchen and understand it's a living, breathing environment, and you have to be a part of that. And once you're a part of that, and you kind of drink the Kool-Aid and get sucked in, you know, and push further, then opportunities arise. I mean, I apprenticed as well, and my jobs were basically one guy calling another guy, being like, hey, you got to take this guy. Like, he's going to take my job. So,
I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't go to culinary school. I mean, it kind of taught me about the culture, and there was a life behind just working in a kitchen, and that's why I didn't work in, you know, big hotels and doing all, you know, like, I mean, but I totally agree. I mean, people graduate, and you know, what do you mean? I have to work 16 hours and get paid minimum wage and hear you yell at me all day, you know? Like,
the perception when we went to school is much different than it is now,
true.
Though.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, actually 95%
of
the people...
Think about the interns we get.
Well, 95% of the people that I graduated with aren't even cooking.
Yeah,
nothing to do with the restaurant industry.
They're all waiters.
Or they're waiters in front of the house. I mean, you know, I mean, it takes a certain type of person. I think the accessibility is a lot greater now. So there's a lot more people. And the Food Network, back to the question, is kind of like glamour. You know, it makes it glamorous.
It's
and
it for
you're
sure.
Like, woo, yeah. I can, you know, do whatever. I can talk and talk and blah, you know. But it's like when it comes down to it, you know, our job is not glamorous.
Right.
I was up at 8:30 in the morning running to the market and all day long cutting and chopping and, you know, like skated out the door at the last second. And as soon as we leave here, I'm going back to make sure that the ordering's done. And, you know, like, it's not glamorous one bit, but those single moments that kind of you do something special like this, or you do an event, or you leave our restaurant and you have that big smile on, that's what makes it special. And it just takes that certain person to kind of, you know, understand that. So I think it's a weaving out process of, like, because you're saying all these interns. I got one 2 weeks ago who came in and worked for a day and was gung-ho. I want it. I want it. I'm coming in. I want it. I want it. You know, it's like, okay, come in. You know, I had her cutting mushrooms for, you know, 2 hours. And, you know, at the end of the night, she looked at me with this broken look and said, this isn't for me. And you're just like, one day? Really? It was an easy day. Come on. You know, like, so, I mean, you know, it's just a weaving out process. And but, you know, I believe in culinary school because I would not be doing what I was doing if I didn't go.
I think if people have the right mindset about it, then they'll get what they need to get out of it.
You get out what you put into it.
Right. Yeah, totally. And, I mean, it's the same as if you skip culinary school and you go into an apprenticeship in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could take out a personal loan for $20,000 and live off ramen for a year and work for free.
You could pay
and get a better
20,
education than
I'll
most culinary
care.
School, you know.
Right.
I'll take applications.
I think it's the heart, too, and the passion.
Yeah,
it's a lot of heart and passion.
It's having a direction.
It's having a direction and just that drive. Yeah. And if you can afford to go to culinary school, I mean, you're going to come out of there kicking ass with that drive. Or if you can't and you apprentice, just like, I mean, well, I don't know, I compare it to, like, electricians and everybody else. There's journeymen, there's people who have gone, and there's people who have learned the trade or the craft, and it's the same thing. You kind of dedicate, you have to dedicate your life to it for a certain point, for sure. I mean, we probably missed out on a lot of fun parties during this time, you know, yeah. But
not a vacation, though.
Not a vacation.
Yeah.
It's a big sacrifice, and it's still a blue-collar job, and I try to tell my cooks that, too. Like, you got to earn your education, so, you know, and it's...
I think that's huge, actually. There's a lot... I fought my way up, tooth and nail, to be creative, to get to that point where then they were looking at me and saying, make the menu, do this, whatever. But until then, I felt like, you know, I was just part of the team, the ant, doing the job, you know. And that's something that's changed a little bit that I see. It's, you know, there wants to be a lot of influence. There wants to be a lot of talk, which is great. It's great when you have that tight-knit team that brings things to the tables and like, oh, I saw this, and they get excited about it. Awesome. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, you earn your stripes. You do your time so that you can go to a place and you can do fermented cartoons and play with baby vegetables and all these things, you know. So,
William, do you make any concessions to this new generation? Like, are you giving younger cooks more of a voice because that's what they're asking for and they're kind of jumping to get involved? Or are you really trying to kind of smack the gavel and keep them in their
stick
place?
Them in the corner? No,
some of them.
No, I mean, what I've tried to do is, I think it's a very clear thing when they come in. It's like, look, you know, it's a working relationship. I have to prove myself to you. You're interviewing me as much as I'm interviewing you. And you know, maybe you saw some great pictures or some photos of some stuff we did. And it's like, you need to come in and see that we can prove that. And once we've proved that, I expect you to get in line and learn and be a part of that machine. And as you're a part of that machine, we're going to come to you. And we're going to be like, hey, what do you think about this? What are your thoughts on this? Mm-hmm. You know, I want that for sure. I mean, I want to, you know, I think what's really interesting about this area is like, I mean, almost all of us were, you know, for Tusk. And, I mean, there's a thing with cooking where you do come from that guy, you know. And maybe you pick up a little bit of his style and you turn it and tweak it your own. But, you know, I want that. I want a breed of cooks that are like, oh, you know, I worked for William and I can throw down. And I know how to fold my towel and my station is clean. And, you know, and whatever, you know. I mean, that's just, it's a vibe. It's what was put into me. And now there's these guys I worked for. There's a sense of pride mm-hmm. amongst them. And I think it just, it also, it gets the next ones in the door.
That's how we sell. Come work with us for 16 hours with no money.
We're
going to teach you a lot.
Those disciples
about
out there.
Cutting mushrooms.
Yeah.
We're going to make you work very hard and be efficient, you know? So when you leave, you can then get paid. But till then, you're not going to.
So, Evan, how many years of the grunt work does it take?
I mean, it varies, you know? Like, I mean, I just had an extern who just left, and he was... I mean, amazing. Hey, he's got a long road ahead of him, but he's got it. He had it. He just understood it. You know, yes, chef, super energetic, and would be the first one in and the last one out. And it was like, I was pushing him out the door, and he's like, no, man, this is, you know, this is school. I'm here. Like, don't push me out. I want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but then other people don't get it, and it's going to take them a long time. You know, like...
So what would you say are maybe the top three characteristics you look for in a young startup cook?
I mean,
like,
to
what
be
do
honest,
they need to have?
Number one is just like you have to be willing to give it up. You know, I mean, when I left high school, I had a ton of friends. I used to party. I used to go out. My family, my holidays, I loved it all. But you just have to be willing to kind of give it up. Right? You know, I mean, and that's what it's about. It's sad and it's hard. But it's hard to say. But, I mean, honestly, for the first 3-4 years, if you don't give that up, you're not going to get what you need to get out of it.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's like
you have to kind of
head down, eyes and ears open, keep your mouth shut.
You need me to work?
There you go. That's what I was looking for.
You need me to work? We chef, you know? Like, what
time?
I feel
like that all over the place these days, but that's definitely where all of us came from.
So is that a San Francisco thing, Brett, or is it an everywhere?
That's a universal thing.
It's universal, and that's why, like, you know, we're talking about, you know, the evolution of restaurants and kitchens and cooks. That's one thing that's always worked. Like, that's why people still practice that kind of, you know, apprenticeships and internships and all that is because, it's all about, I mean,
discipline
that's
is the best word.
That's the biggest thing that I always look for is a self-discipline, you know, that you're gonna understand that doing something different on a day-to-day basis is going to affect more than just, like,
With that being said, though, it's still, I think this generation is one of the more collaborative.
Yeah.
Of any in the past, meaning that I think all of us have just as much to learn from our cooks as they have to learn from us.
That's
because we've opened that door and we've allowed that.
How does this taste? What do you think?
Right.
You know, I want opinions. I want, you know, because he knows, they know, she knows, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want it. I want the, you know. But at the end of the day, I mean, there's kind of one voice, and it's, you know.
It's yours.
It's important.
You're a god.
That's one thing that I learned from Evan in my time with him is that he's really good at getting people to do what they're good at. And it helps manage time, and it helps everything.
Can't force
it. It's really important.
Pain, you know? Right.
Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people are different. For me, I take people case by case. So, like you're saying, it's like the intern who comes in who's really good at picking greens, that's all you're going to do, you know? But the intern who's enthusiastic, he's going to help on the meat station plating up. He's going to help over here. But, you know, I just take case by case. And, you know, but it's this drive to kind of give it up and let it go and just, this is what I'm doing, you know? Like, and that's, you can kind of see it right away.
Right.
You know, other people get into it and they're distracted. There's a focus that you need and a discipline. You know, I mean, I'm a very relaxed, loose guy. And if we're on the same page, like, everything's great and we'll be joking and laughing. But as soon as that page gets turned and you're on that different page, there's no, you know, that's quickly changed, you know.
Okay, so audience questions in relatively close to 3 minutes. Just a heads up. We would like you to keep your questions short and clever. No pressure. So I have one more question before we wrap this up. What are the things you can learn from young cooks now that this more collaborative nature has come up? Like, what are you learning from these young
patients,
little kids?
What can't you learn? I mean, you know, they come with things that you just don't even, you know, like, what there's a ton of things. You learn anything from them.
What's interesting about this industry is you get a lot of people who have changed, you know, their industry themselves. Okay. So you'll have people in the kitchen who have degrees in architecture. You know what I mean? And you're working with these very well-educated people, and I think that is something that has definitely started to change in the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting people with bachelor degrees and masters in other areas that isn't even cooking. And so having the, I think that maturity level in there is a huge bonus.
It's interesting.
I think they also really understand their time more and get more out of their time when they're there with this experience. I have to agree with what Mike said on that.
When people are older, when they have more,
you know,
professional experience.
No, it's necessarily older. It's just if they've had a prior career and then
right.
they've, you know, well, I don't know. For me, then there's two things there. They're passionate. There's enough passion for them to say, like, I'm going to leave this job with this 401k and this weekends off and vacation time and 9 to 5, and I'm going to go in this dungeon and spend time with Evan for like 14 hours a day. And
that doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't sound good at all. You know, but the time they're there, I mean, it's I see them absorb so much more. You know, and I just think it's polished. They've already been through a little bit of that learning process once. So that's an interesting dynamic. And I think what's an interesting dynamic is having culinary students next to that. Because at first they think they're going to burn them. And at first they're like, and then secondly it's...
It can be really beneficial to people just coming out of culinary school or high school or younger cooks, you know, to have that degree of discipline. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think our time is up. We're going to go to audience questions. But I just want to remind our audience that this program is presented by the Commonwealth Clubs in Forum, Connect Your Intellect. And tonight we are hosting Meet and Eat with SF's hottest culinary crew. We have Brandon Jew of Bar Agricole, Brett Cooper of Outer Lands, Michael Gaines of the forthcoming Central Kitchen, Evan Rich of Qua, and pastry chef William Werner of Outfit Generic. Now, it looks like we have some questions lined up here. This is great.
This is a question for Brandon. I wanted to track back to the ingredients point that we were talking about earlier and how important sourcing is. And you mentioned biodynamics. I'm wondering, what's your thinking about those ingredients? Does it have to do with flavor profile or sustainability? Or what does that biodynamics mean to you?
I think when I first heard about biodynamics, it kind of sounded like witchcraft and a little bit of, I don't know, it just sounded like a bunch of hippies doing some weird stuff. But I think the products really spoke to me, and the life force of the ingredients were remarkably different. And I think kind of talking to the farmers and understanding why they do things the way they do things, it's about observation and it's about attention to their craft. And I think I became a believer. I don't know what they do. They stuff weird stuff into horns and bury it and look at the lunar calendar for some, I don't know what they do. But I know when the produce comes to me that I am just floored. Even the simplest things like chard and onions and the simplest things that we get from these farms are, it's inspiring. So, yeah.
Great.
Hi, my name's Louise, and my question's more on the business side. What is your relationship, opinion, on social media phenomenon, because it's here to stay, but businesses like Yelp, food bloggers, food writers, if it's a frenemy relationship, like, tell me what you think and how you manage this.
Grain of salt.
You have to take it for what it is. I mean, they all serve their purpose. And as much as all of us don't read Yelp, I mean, it's still relevant to our restaurants. I mean, the general public read it. And, I mean, basically, we're in the hospitality industry. We're here to make other people happy. So we have to pay attention to it.
I mean, there is a limit to making people happy. I mean, we cook to make you happy, but, you know, there are definitely useful things that come out of Yelp and social media. And, you know, just, you know, we want to hear what you say, but, you know, it kind of negates
just
the fact.
Just think about what you say.
When people, well, you know, you read things and it says, like, they were stupid and the waiter was horrible. And it's like, okay, you know, elaborate, because I don't know if he's stupid or not if you don't tell me why, you know, and I think it's helpful, but you take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, I'm not going to change what I do, you know, within limits. To, you know, like, if you come in and I don't serve a burger and that's not the type of restaurant, I'm not going to start cooking burgers for you because you wrote a horrible Yelp review and this is what is going to make you happy. It's like, what's going to make you happy is not eating here, and that's going to make me happy as well. So,
using social media to develop relationships? Do you guys tweet or do you
definitely
actively use it to...
It's definitely helpful, and it definitely helps get the word out. And, you know, there are dishes you post and, you know, things that you say, oh, I had this dish and this wasn't right. And, you know, and all these things help you get better. And, you know, it's just, it's so saturated that there's so much information that it's, you know, it's hard to take criticism, you know, as much as that's what our job is to, you know, to help refine and be better. But it's hard when, you know, people leave your restaurant and say that was horrible or that was salty or, you know, and it's like, you know, if you really thought about the, if you really understood the work that went behind what we're doing, you know, none of us are in the kitchen just getting it done. You know, like we're there tasting, we're there seasoning, we're there cooking, we're sacrificing. And sometimes it gets a little much, and you know, the best thing to do is just shut it off. Like, you know what? I don't want to hear about that. But, you know, to be a professional and then kind of help grow and understand your clientele, some of it's really helpful.
Thank you, Evan.
I have a question for all you guys. Thanks for being here tonight. The conversation is fantastic. When you're outside of your professional environments, your kitchens, your restaurants, what are you cooking in your personal space? Like, what is that all-time down, dirty, go-to meal that you find yourself, like, making in your boxer shorts, like that kind of food?
Is there anyone specific you'd like to direct the question to?
Any you guys would like to answer?
I think Will's making croissants, no?
William?
No.
What do you cook in your boxer shorts?
Any dessert at home, actually. Yeah, so.
Anything that's really fast that you can eat in the 20 minutes that you spend between the time you get home and the time you go to sleep. Quesadillas.
I like vegetables. I mean, to be honest, when I'm at the farmer's market, I take a couple bunches home or something, and you know what, the 2 days a week I have to cook at home is just nothing, like simple. Like I think the other night we made quinoa with, you know, broccoli and cauliflower, and it was awesome, and it's simple and just, you know, easy, and there was no thought behind it. It was just kind of, we did it, you know.
We were actually talking about that on the way here, spicy food. Yeah, always spicy. Always mess up your palate as much as you can on your days off.
I love Chinese food.
Yeah, it's just shock your palate.
I love going to some sour, like spicy. I don't know.
Yeah.
We kind of some greasy, sticky, sweet, salty Chinese food. Nothing better.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
My wife hates it, but I love it.
Gentlemen, hello. This has been fascinating. My name's Deanna. I'd like to circle back a little bit to the beginning of the conversation where we were talking about the change in the cuisine in San Francisco over the last 4 years and how it's been noticeable. Well, 4 years ago, we had a big economic hit, 2007, 2008. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on the impact of the recession, on how you are as a chef, your creativity, your resources, but also the palates and literally the pocketbooks of your customers and how those two relate. And for several of you, you've opened restaurants or are going to open a restaurant. Does that impact your decision to do that? It's kind of a bigger question, but I think
it's a really good question, though. I think if you look at a lot of our menus, yeah, we did actually.
So this is Brett Cooper speaking from Outer Lands. Just,
I think that a lot of us have kind of cut out those extreme luxury ingredients like, you know, caviar, foie gras, filet, things like that. And we're cooking a lot of vegetables these days, but it just in more interesting ways. We're cooking offcuts, bavette steak instead of filet, and we're using shanks, and we're using, pig's ears and things like that, and just making it more accessible than it might have been in the past, or just opening people's eyes up to things like that instead of, you know, charging somebody $45 for an entree. So I think that's definitely a big thing that happened in the last, you know, maybe even longer than 4 years ago. But
with me, without going into too much detail, the restaurant that, you know, my wife and I have planned to open is kind of, I mean, we've both always worked in these fine dining, you know, spend your bankroll at the restaurants. And, you know, we're kind of going the complete opposite route. I mean, we're definitely not going to turn our backs on our past and what we've done. But we want it to be accessible to everybody. And I know better than anyone how hard it hit, you know, your wallet got hit because I have a kid, you know, my wife was out of work and this and that. And it's just like, I love to go out and eat and I want to make something that I would love to go and be able to afford. So, you know, price is definitely always on your mind and it's more about just being creative, you know, and it's not giving up on these luxury ingredients per se, because if I can use caviar, I'm going to use it, you know? But it's just being creative and using all aspects of everything.
I think it's, I mean, we opened
This is Brandon Jew from Bar Agricole speaking.
We opened probably at the worst time. I think.
Yeah, you guys are right. Thick of it.
Yeah, I think I was surprised that the San Francisco diners, that was important to them. They would like going out to eat and supporting restaurants. It was a nice relief. I mean, to be able not to compromise like what our vision was to do. So
I will say that I think we're all very fortunate to be working in this business and survive 2008, because you could never pay for that kind of experience that I think we all went through. It was, everything kind of got flipped upside down in about 2 days. So
we're also fortunate for all of the, you know, people that live in San Francisco and the surrounding areas being so open to
support,
to find, you know, dining in general.
Support.
I mean,
$20 at a restaurant instead of putting it in the bank.
Yeah,
love it.
I mean, that's seriously, we never actually in restaurants, like, I think we got the least of all of it. I mean, people still want to go out to eat, and we really appreciate that. It's a huge part of us still being able to do it. So
I think that's very true. Thank you, chefs.
Thank you.
Okay, next question.
Hi, this is for all you guys. I was just wondering what or how you thought the progression, the age of chefs, exec chefs, chef owners, how it's gone to like 24 to like 30. Like, how do you think that's happened from, you know, exec chefs being like 50, 60 years old, and now it's like seems like they're just getting younger and younger.
Great question. Why are chefs, executive chefs, getting younger?
A lot of turnover.
I think money.
Well, there's that glamour aspect that we talked about earlier. Is, you know, people see chefs on TV and chefs in the media, and they say, "Well, that's what I want to do," and they set their mind on it. And maybe they have money from some other facet in their lives, and they say, "Okay, here it is. I'm going to do this." And some succeed, some don't.
It's also the environment itself. There's a younger kind of attitude in the kitchen, and it's not, you don't grind yourself away till you're 65 in the kitchen. I mean, some people do. And so there's a lot of turnover. There's more variety. So, I mean, a young kid coming into a restaurant at the right time can move up real quick, and all of a sudden you're sous chef. And that's one of the problems that kind of occurs, is because people move up way too quick. But I think it's a younger attitude, a younger kind of environment. I mean, I think there needs to be energy and life in it.
I do think there's some financial to it. I do think there's some salary-driven, you know. Parlaying on this, of the younger youth, they're willing to take less money to get their name on the jacket in that first round, or to really get into the right seat that they want to be at, which can be a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know, you know.
Depends on the person.
You know?
Sarah Deseran wrote a really interesting article about how there's a lot of young money here. So, like, mm-hmm. Twitter and all these big startup companies that are doing really well that are interested in investing into restaurants and creativity for the Bay Area. So I think part of it has to do with just the Bay Area being pretty financially stable, too.
Makes sense.
Do you think that it's because that consumers are younger, like the people that are coming to the restaurants are a lot younger, and they're looking not so much for traditional things, but stuff
definitely.
That's
this
more
is not
fresh
your parents'
and more
restaurant.
New? Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean,
consumers have become more savvy and educated on the subject also. I mean,
chef-driven restaurants are, you know, about the chef and the feed, you know, so it's like, that chef is going to kind of dictate the environment, and younger consumers mean they want a hipper, cooler kind of feeling place, and it's just, you know, that's definite. I mean, you know, that's just the way it is. I mean, I don't want to go to my parents' restaurant, you know, and put on a jacket and a tie. It's, you know, and that's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, but it's true. But at the same point in time, like, all you guys are coming from fine dining, and there's not, like, white tablecloths and, you know, this whole other aspect of service there that is traditional fine dining, but your food is on the same level to me. So it's, you know, it's, I think, this new group of, I think they're savvy, too. You know, I think, do we save all our money and go to the laundry, or do we go see what these guys are doing in pockets, you know, and have a really great, amazing experience with just tons of flavor and tons of technique? That's what I do.
Okay, we have time for one last question.
You guys talked about that guy that you learned from. I want to know who that is, but it also made me wonder who are the women leaders? Why? I mean,
it's a good question.
You're obviously talented and sharp, hot chefs in San Francisco, but who are the talented hot women in San Francisco who are
my wife, leading? Sarah Rich. She'll be running the stove at a restaurant in Hayes Valley.
There's tons. I mean,
are there? I mean, I have trouble coming up.
Judy Rogers has been like a huge mentor to me.
And Judy is at Zuni.
Yeah,
I've got to go with Belinda Leong coming out. B Patisserie, worked with her at Gary Danko and a good friend of mine, and very hardworking, and hopefully open something here in the city soon.
It's true. Yeah. William, I see you.
I think Belinda's a great person. I mean, I have two women that I know that are pastry chefs at large hotels in Chicago, and I think it's amazing how long they've been in the environment. One's Celine Plano, and the other one is Sarah Kowski. I probably butchered her last name, but super talented chefs. You know, one's at Trump, and I think, you know, moving up in the pastry world of running the hotel, where you're responsible for everything. You know, you've got a staff of 15, 16 just for pastry, and there's like 9 outlets. To be in that, you know, hot seat with a male-dominated chef de cuisine and banquet chef and executive chef is really challenging for them. I think they give it their all.
It's a hard environment. Women sometimes get, you know, not the best treatment. And, you know, for me, I love working with women. And, you know, when I met my wife at Boulay, she was my boss, you know. that's how I moved up, you know. But, you know,
it's one way to do
you
it.
You work with these kind of male chauvinists, kind of old school, and, you know, it's a hard environment and it takes its toll. And, you know, there's this whole other aspect of then family. And, you know, like I said, my wife just had a baby, and, you know, her coming to a kitchen and grinding 16 hours a day is kind of not really an option, you know. And so she's going to find her voice in a different way. And I mean, you know, for me coming up, I've learned from everybody I've ever worked with. I mean, man, woman, anybody. I mean, I just take it. I'm a sponge when it comes to that. I look at everybody and just I want to learn from everybody. I drank the Kool-Aid and I learned how to work for cheap because I'm learning, you know. And that's, I don't know.
Great answer, Evan. Thanks. So now we are going to go to our final new policy, the way we end all in forum gatherings. Chefs, I would like you all to answer, what are your 60-second ideas to change the world? William.
I think Evan's closest to you. No, I mean, I think if everyone took, you know, 5 minutes out of the day to get to know the person to their left or right a little bit better, I think that would be a great start, you know? We could start right now if you guys just want to turn to each other. Shake a hand, give a high five, find what that person does. I mean, you know, you could be Facebook friends later and tweet to each other and start a revolution.
Nice. Michael?
It's not 60 seconds, but we could probably start by decreasing the carny population.
The carny population.
Yeah, that's it. That's okay. All I got.
Brandon, would you like to follow that one up?
Oh. I think I think we just have to kind of take time to smell the roses kind of thing a little bit more.
Great answer. Brett.
Everyone should just calm down.
It's true.
Chill out.
Especially on Yelp. And Evan?
I don't know. Learn to trust your chefs and don't get mad when we fucking curse, okay?
Okay, and actually, I know you all want to talk about this. And as everyone knows, there is a dinner to follow this panel where each of these chefs are going to be cooking a course. And I think everyone in the audience would like to know what you all are making. So can everybody say what dish they're going to be preparing?
Well, I got the first course, so I'm just going to do like a raw sliced halibut with bone marrow and lime vinaigrette and some sliced turnips with a bone marrow and turnip green puree. It's going to be good.
I'm following him. I'm going to do a chilled sunchoke soup with some roasted sunchoke, some preserved Meyer lemon, Ras Al Hanout, and a nettle cream.
Mm. Brett. Thank you. Brandon.
Mikey's next. Mikey's going to be next.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, Mike's next.
Black cod, espalette, and celery.
I love espalette. Okay.
I'm going to do Devil's Gulch rabbit loin with, like, a play on a lot of different mustard. And
sausage,
I'm going to... Well, yeah, it'll be some sausage.
Is it a rabbit
killer
sausage?
Killer sausage.
And we're going to try to get those fermented cardoos on there. We'll see how they turn out. They're fermenting as we speak.
And William's on dessert.
William's on dessert. We're going to do some milk chocolate. We're going to take a bunch of interesting citrus, crispy, confit, fresh, raw, and then burnt honey ice cream and a little bit of violet. And then we're going to send you home with some pills, some chocolate pills, and some... Well, we'll keep that secret, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are secrets, and there are still tickets left. You can buy them online. And that concludes our panel. So I'd just like to take a moment to give everyone a big round of applause again. Thank you so much, chefs, for being with us.
Yeah.
Now the meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.